Right now, though, my next guest is on the line. He is Dr. Emmanuel Navon. He is a lecturer of the School of Political Science, Government and International Affairs at Tel Aviv University. If that wasn't enough, he's a fellow at the Jerusalem Institute for Strategy and Security. Dr. Navon, thank you for joining me on Chai FM this afternoon.
Happy to be here.
So, interestingly, Times of Israel reporting that Amit Segel, the commentator on Channel 12 News, has commented that the Israeli strike on Doha, the failed Israeli strike on Doha, was actually a hell of a lot more successful than people give it credit for. He makes a linkage between the Trump plan that was announced last night and the strike. What's your opinion on that take?
Well, the strike itself, unfortunately, failed to eliminate Hamas leadership in Qatar. But on the other hand, and I believe this is what Amit Segal is arguing, the strike had a very strong psychological effect on the Qatari government, which is that just because they're super wealthy and because they've bought themselves out in the West and basically have this huge leverage on Western governments thanks to the billions of dollars they've invested in politicians and in universities and in the media, it doesn't mean that they can still enjoy, that they can enjoy full immunity from hosting and funding Hamas. So I think the message that Israel sent to them is that just because you're Qatar doesn't mean you can enjoy some type of immunity from hosting Hamas. And I think that the fact that they felt this, they felt threatened, they felt that, you know, Israel can strike wherever it wants inside Qatar itself. Unfortunately, we did not eliminate the Hamas leadership there, but I think that the Qataris got the message, and this, I think, is a welcome development.
So you're agreeing with him that there is a linkage between the failed, in inverted commas, strike and the deal that was put on the table last night?
I don't know if I agree with him on this specific point. As I said, I do believe that the strike did achieve a psychological effect. As I said, to what extent did the Qatari leadership conclude from this strike that it had to be more flexible? It's hard to estimate, but I think that even though President Trump officially kind of condemned Israel's strike in Doha, you know, the fact that he didn't go out of his way to condemn Israel shows to the Qataris that, you know, it's fine with the U.S., you know. And so I think that the Qataris until now were not acting in good faith. They were pretending to be honest brokers between Israel and Hamas, when in fact they support Hamas financially, politically, and otherwise, and feeling threatened, I think, it probably was inducive of them, you know, being more willing to compromise and also to put pressure on Hamas to compromise. We shall see in the coming hours or the coming days whether Hamas accepts the peace proposal from President Trump.
I read some commentary today, I've forgotten exactly where it was, but the thrust of the argument was that Trump would never have presented this plan had he not had assurances from Qatar that the Hamas leadership will accept. What's your comment on that?
I'm sure President Trump does not want to make a fool of himself. As it is, he had kind of promised he would end the war in Ukraine within 24 hours.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Vladimir Putin
yeah.
Has taken him for a ride.
Yeah.
So I don't think that Trump wanted to be, you know, to be taken for granted also in the Middle East. So I'm sure that his tolerance for risk and political risk at this point is very low. And I do believe that he did get some commitment from Qatar, at least that they would do everything in their power to demand from Hamas an acceptance of the plan. But at the end of the day, you know, if Hamas decides to say no, they can also do it. Qatar does have quite an amount of leverage on Hamas. And I do assume also that the Qatari leadership committed to Donald Trump to do everything it could,
That makes
but it doesn't
sense.
mean it can commit to deliver.
That makes a whole lot of sense. Just in terms of those of us on the outside who don't understand the inner workings of Hamas, who gets to make the final decisions? Is it the exiled portion who's in Doha and Istanbul, or is it those in Gaza?
So it's actually unclear because most of the Hamas leadership, thankfully, in Gaza has been eliminated. And it's not entirely clear who calls the shot in the Gaza Strip itself. And of course, what is left of the Hamas leadership in the Gaza Strip is in charge on the ground, but it does depend from the outside for its money and supplies. And that is mostly the leadership or what is left of it in Qatar. But of course, there's a lot of pressure on the Hamas, what is left of the Hamas leadership in Gaza, from the civilian population itself, which has suffered the disastrous consequences of October 7 because of Hamas, and is extremely frustrated about the fact that Gaza has been mostly destroyed because of this decision to do October 7. And you hear a lot from journalists who go into the Gaza Strip, complaints from the civilian population saying we're living through hell, and the so-called leadership in Doha lives in luxury hotels. So why is that? So I do think that the leadership of Hamas in Doha, whatever is left of it, does understand that if it wants to keep some type of influence on Gaza in the future, it has to listen to this very clear message coming from the civilian population, which is lives have been destroyed. And meanwhile, those people in Doha who call themselves Hamas are having the good life.
Isn't it strange that at this point, I mean, we've seen the devastation in Gaza. We've seen the very difficult situation that the Gazans find themselves in. Are you surprised that there's been no sort of internal attempt to overthrow Hamas from within the Strip?
There have been attempts, but again, the Hamas is so ruthless that anybody caught demonstrating or even holding a sign against Hamas is immediately killed and tortured in public. I mean, we've seen scenes of public torture by Hamas of civilians in Gaza who were expressing their frustration at Hamas. So Hamas is so ruthless that any attempt to overthrow it or even to express frustration at Hamas is met with the most cruel reprisals.
The Samud flotilla, which is on its way to Israel, ought to be arriving pretty soon. Today it was disclosed that documentation has been found linking the leadership of the flotilla to Hamas in Gaza. I think that changes the scenario significantly. This isn't just a let's drop off some humanitarian aid mission anymore. This becomes something a whole lot more nefarious. Do you think within Israel and the Israeli military and the Israeli authorities, this changes the position significantly in terms of how they'll react to the arrival?
Those flotillas were never, let's be clear, they were never about dropping humanitarian aid. It was always a propaganda operation, those selfie flotillas of European useful idiots who don't care about humanitarian aid, of course, because when Israel offered to divert their aid and distribute it directly, they were not interested. They're interested in posting pictures of themselves on Instagram and describing themselves as heroes of justice, when in fact, they are the useful idiots of a jihadist organization. Now it's proven, as you said, there are documents that really prove that those people are basically acting on behalf of Hamas. It wasn't clear, but now it's official. So of course that Israel is more than entitled to treat those people as collaborators of Hamas. And as I said, the previous flotillas were diverted. I mean, the people on it that tried to break the blockade, the legal blockade, were arrested and sent back to the country. But now, when it's, as we know, completely official that they're basically acting on behalf of Hamas,
changes it.
They will and shall be treated as such.
It's interesting because last week, before I was privy to this information, I thought, just let them land. You don't want a repeat of the Mavi Mara. That would be the worst possible case, I would imagine, for Israel. But I wonder, what advice would you give to the Israeli authorities on how to best handle this situation?
Well, first of all, physically they cannot actually land in the Gaza Strip.
There's no port there.
So, you know, the whole thing is a joke. And they know they cannot land there because you cannot land if there's no port. The only way for them to land is at the port of Ashdod, let's say. So it just goes to confirm that the whole thing is a PR stunt, disconnected from reality, that they really don't care about bringing aid. It's not, you know, a few bags of potato chips that are going to make a difference for the 2 million people in Gaza, where Israel itself is providing millions of tons of aid to the Gaza Strip. So they cannot even land. But you're right, like theoretically, why not let them, you know, enter Gaza and be dealt with by Hamas? They certainly would deserve it. You know, if these people are going to be useful idiots, they should bear the consequences to the end. I'm not even sure if they realize that they cannot even land there, but who cares? Like they have no idea what they're doing. Like when you ask those people, you ask them, you know, when they say from the river to the sea, they have no idea which river, which sea. They take a flotilla to Gaza. They don't even know that they cannot land. You know, it's, as I said, they are useful idiots, just they're not very useful.
I want to circle back for a final question to the Doha incident. I want to talk about the conference of Arab countries that happened pretty shortly afterwards, a couple of days later. I personally was quite surprised and shocked at the vociferousness of the anger that was expressed by so many of the Arab countries. Arab countries that had peace treaties with Israel, I'm thinking particularly Egypt, I'm thinking Jordan, even the UAE. Were you surprised? And what effect do you think they're playing to the streets?
I'm not surprised because we know they're just a bunch of hypocrites. You know, King Abdullah and President al-Sisi pray five times a day for Israel's victory against Hamas, right? And they're so happy that we're the one doing the job for them. But they enjoy the best of two worlds. They know that they want us to win, but they actually gain politically from criticizing Israel and calling us horrible people committing genocide. For them, they enjoy the best of two worlds, you know. In vis-a-vis their public opinion, even though they're not democracies, they can say that, you know, they're very tough on Israel. They have this very tough rhetoric on Israel. But on the other hand, they want Israel to win. So why not? Like, hypocrisy it pays, basically, in the case. In the case of Egypt and Jordan, especially Jordan. The king of Jordan wouldn't survive politically for a day without Israel and the United States, and economically as well. And he knows it. And so that's why he wants a strong Israel that defeats the Muslim Brothers, so does al-Sisi. But that doesn't prevent them from lambasting Israel publicly and show their public opinions. Look, I'm paying the lip service of saying all those horrible things against Israel. So they're just hypocrites, and why not? It pays.
And then a final question, and purely because I've been on air for the last 3 hours and I don't know what the latest developments are in Israel, has there been any movement, has there been any indication of acceptance or of the Trump peace plan by Hamas, or are we still waiting?
We're still waiting. We don't know yet, which, again, this whole situation, the whole world is waiting for a genocidal terrorist Nazi organization to be kind enough, whether or not they're willing to respond positively to the president of the greatest power on earth for a plan supported by most Arab and Muslim countries. And we're all here waiting. The whole thing is surrealistic. But the most important thing, as President Trump said yesterday during the press conference, is that if Hamas says no, so Israel has carte blanche to finish the job. Absolutely. And they know it. It was said publicly by the U.S. president. If they decide to say no, so they'll pay the consequences.
Dr. Emmanuel Navon, thank you for talking to me this afternoon. Gmar Chatima Tova.